Now, let's talk physics. Let's talk experiments that revolutionized physics, and in particular, the title of the book, Schrödinger's Cat and 49 Other Experiments. Adam Hart-Davis, who's been on the show before, joins us again. I'm delighted to welcome you back, Adam. Hello.
Lovely to be back.
This has caused quite a few listener reactions this morning when I tried desperately to explain the Schrödinger's cat scenario and tried to simplify it, as you've done in your book, and ended up in a right mess, to be honest with you. Not the easiest of concepts to get your head around, is it?
It's quite complicated. And actually, Schrödinger, who's a very bright bloke, he deliberately set up this idea in order to annoy people and worry them, because He was a great expert in quantum mechanics. He knew about it, but he didn't believe that you could apply it to the real world. He thought it would apply only to electrons and things.
Oh, okay. And the basic premise of it was that you can be in two states at any one time. Well, anyone who's seen me coming back for a night out will verify that's certainly the case.
That's true. So the cat in the box could be alive and dead at the same time, and that's very, very bizarre. No cats were hurt in the course of this experiment. It was entirely theoretical. But
right.
The idea that a cat could be alive and dead was obviously ludicrous. And that was the point he wanted to make.
Yeah, and it was quite convoluted, to be honest. The cat would be shut in a steel box with no means of escape. They had a mechanism with a speck of radioactive material, a Geiger counter to measure it, obviously, and a bottle of poison. And if one of the atoms of the radioactive material decayed, the Geiger counter detected it. It would then activate a relay. It caused a hammer to smash the bottle and release the poison, which would kill the cat. But because of the unpredictability of radioactivity, you wouldn't know whether that was after 1 millisecond or 1 million years.
Correct. That's beautifully put, if I may put. Yes, I say so. Yeah, that's exactly it. And so you don't know, from the outside, you don't know whether the cat's alive or dead. I would, because my cat would be complaining like hell if I hadn't fed it. But so that's a sort of separate issue.
Yeah, I mean, well, the basic philosophy of it being alive or dead must be proven by the fact that it would die of a lack of oxygen and food, wouldn't it?
In due course, yes, that's right.
But then it got even more bonkers, and what I loved was Hugh Everett in 1957, who went off into a complete a tailspin about numbers of universes.
Yeah, well, people do that, you know, they're called physicists. Yeah. There may be many, many universes, and we may just be a bud of some other universe, but we don't know about the other ones because they're in different dimensions. It's very peculiar. I didn't believe that until I heard Martin Rees talking about it. Now, he's a bright bloke, and he probably knows. So there may be many universes. Don't worry about it. It's not going to affect you there at RTE.
I'm absolutely delighted to hear that. Now, the book is brilliant for anyone who's remotely interested in physics, and you start way back with people when they had great names, like Empedocles and obviously Archimedes and Eratosthenes. They were great. Just the sound of them makes you believe them, doesn't it?
Yes, I love them, particularly those ones. Empedocles lived in Sicily, and he was the chap who came up with the idea that everything was made of four elements, earth, air, fire, and water.
Right.
And he explained his ideas in detail, and actually that idea lasted for a couple of thousand years. But perhaps why we remember him is that he thought he was immortal. And so when he got a bit old, probably sort of 50, he took all of his followers up to the top of Mount Etna, which is a volcano on Sicily, and he jumped in.
Ah, okay.
And we remember him ever since.
But was he alive or dead, or was he in a different universe?
But probably all three. But anyway, once you become immortal, Bill, go up to Mount Etna, take all your followers, both your listeners, and jump in while they're all listening, and then they'll remember you forever.
Do you know what? I don't think I'll bother, actually, Adam. Thanks very much. Now, some of the stuff you talk about here is quite straightforward, but explained brilliantly. I mean, Archimedes himself, of course, tells us why our baths overflow.
Yes. Now that was really neat. I mean, he was the greatest mathematician of the ancient world. He also lived on Sicily, obviously a hotbed.
Yeah.
But he lived in Syracuse, and he was given the problem by the king, who was an absolute unpleasant person, of finding out whether the new crown was pure gold. And he hadn't a clue how to do this. It was a very fancy crown, and he didn't know, wasn't allowed to damage it in any way. But then he wandered down to have a bath. Very occasionally, only about once a month, he went to have a bath in the public bath. And he got in, and a little bit of water slopped over the side. And also, he noticed that he suddenly felt not heavy. He felt light. He was floating in the water. And he put these two ideas together and came up with a most brilliant, brilliant idea. First is that he, getting into the bath, had displaced some water. Mm-hmm. Water over the side. You'll have seen that. You know, you get in the water too, a bath too quick, and the water stops all over.
Absolutely.
The floor. Right. And the other thing was that it had taken away his weight because he was feeling an up thrust. And he realized he could but lower this crown into water, see how much water was displaced, measure the up thrust, and work out whether it was pure gold. It was a very, very clever, cunning bunch of ideas he had all at one go.
Wow.
And he was so excited by this that he leapt out of the bath stark naked and ran home shouting, "Eureka, Eureka, I've got the answer, I found it." But that's the story.
And then when he was released from prison, he was able to tell people about it.
That's right. I'm not sure it was illegal to run through the streets of Syracuse naked in those days.
Oh, fair enough, fair enough. Well, there's another one I'm not going to try and prove either. The world and how heavy it is comes up twice.
Yes.
One with using a mountain and one without using a mountain.
Beautiful. Two beautiful experiments. The first one was Neville Maskelyne. He was the Astronomer Royal. This is the late 18th century. And Newton, 80 years earlier, had said that if you hang a weight on a piece of string, it will hang absolutely vertically downwards unless there is a mountain nearby, in which case it might be pulled a bit towards the mountain.
Right.
I call that the attraction of mountains. I thought it'd be a bit of a bore because you wouldn't be able to get a true vertical if you live near a mountain.
Yes.
Neville Maskelyne realized that you could use this to measure the mass of the Earth. So he found, well, first of all, he had to find the best mountain, and he sent a bloke off with a guinea a day plus expenses to ride all over Scotland. And the guy came back and said Schiehallion was the right mountain, 40 miles north of Perth.
Uh-huh.
So Maskelyne was sent up there by the king. The king said, thought this was a great idea and sent him off. And he camped halfway up the side of Schiehallion. And he measured where he was by looking at the stars and using a plumb bob. A very accurate astronomical measurements. It took 3 months because the weather was so bad. Then he moved around the other side of the mountain and did the same thing again. Meanwhile, teams of surveyors with chains and theodolites and all sorts of other equipment were measuring the same thing, the distance between the two camps.
Right.
And the discrepancy of about 400 meters, i.e. they both measured the distance between the two camps, and they got the answer 400 meters wrong. And that was because Maskelyne's plumb bob had been pulled towards the mountain and has distorted his vertical.
Wow.
Well, then he didn't know how on earth to calculate the thing, so he went to a friend of his, a man called Hutton, who was at Woolwich, and he said, "Look, can you work out the mass of the mountain?" And Hutton had this wonderful lot of heights measured by the surveyors, and he had the brilliant idea of joining together with a very faint pencil, he said, all the positions that were the same height. So in other words, he invented contour line in order to the size of the mountain. And from measuring the size of the mountain, the deflection of the plumb bob, they were able to calculate the mass of the Earth at 5,000 million, million, million tons. They weren't as accurate as Newton had been guessing it. But nevertheless, that was the first measurement of the mass of the Earth. Neville Maskelyne.
Wow. That kind of experiment really appeals to me. I loved physics at school. I did A-level in the end, but it was just one of the things I loved doing. But my head would start to spin when we got into quantum physics and the real bright guys of, you know, the 1940s onwards. This is serious business, isn't it, now? I mean, you've got to have quite a large brain to get your head around some of these experiments.
That's right. The great thing is to start with the easy ones, and if you get bored, stop.
There's one I'm particularly fascinated in, and I'm not really sure that Bell gives us the answer. Do little green men exist? Well, black holes maybe, but little green men?
Oh, no. Jocelyn Bell, she's lovely. She's from Belfast, and she has the most lovely accent. She's a very, very sweet lady. I talked to her at length at one point. She was doing her doctorate at Cambridge, and they built their own radio telescope. That was, she said, she got a very a sledgehammer hammering posts in and swinging wire between them. And she was observing, they were observing various things, but she noticed an anomaly in her results. Every now and then there was a little bit of what she called scrap on the chart paper. And eventually she saw it coming up. She rushed out to the observatory late at night, and she had to get out of the lab before 9 because they locked it then. So she jumped on a bike and went out, and she observed this scruff in great detail, and then she took it to her supervisor, and they couldn't think what it was. They thought it must be aliens communicating from outer space. They couldn't imagine anything else. And then she had to go home to Ireland for the Christmas, and she couldn't mention it to anybody, and they were about to get engaged, and she couldn't even tell her fiancé, and it was absolute, you know, tent-hook stuff. And it wasn't for a couple of weeks later that they realised it couldn't be aliens, because it was actually coming from all over the place, several areas of sky, slightly different signals. And it turned out to be pulsars. Nobody had ever heard of a pulsar. They're very rapidly rotating neutron stars, which emit pulses of radiation at very regular intervals, like 1 a second or 1 every 1 1/4 seconds. And because it was so regular, they thought it must be alien-made. But because there were lots of them coming from all over the place, they realized there couldn't be aliens all over the universe, you know, sending slightly different signals. So they must be something natural, and they turned out to be pulsars. And her boss got a Nobel Prize, and she didn't, which was, I thought, rotten.
Well, the next time we have a transmitter issue, I'm giving her a call. You must leave me her number so I can send her off to sort it out.
Yeah. She is a wonderful lady, so I'm sure she'll help you.
Well, the book is great, as always, particularly if you're a physics nutter like me. 50 experiments that revolutionised physics, including the famous Schrödinger's cat. I'm told, by the way, that one of our listeners, that if you read Douglas Adams' book, Dirk Gently's Holistic Detective Agency, it's not only funny, but gives you a great explanation of Schrödinger's cat.
Done. I will put it on my list immediately.
Fantastic. Adam Hart Davis, thank you, as always, for joining. It's been a pleasure, sir.
It's great fun. Thank
all
you
the best.
Much.
Cheers, and bye-bye. Thanks.